This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. There are three things President Obama and Mitt Romney agree on. The recession continues, the middle class is suffering, and something should be done about the deficit. The words are achingly familiar, but what do they mean? UNC alumna and CNN producer Frances Causey has made a documentary film that reveals the causes and effects of our current economic crisis.
This has been the greatest wealth transfer in the history, at least of American kind, if not mankind.
The movie follows 60 years of policy shifts and offers analysis by economists, historians, and activists. The film is called Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? And it screens at the Haw River Ballroom in Saxapahaw tonight. Frances Causey joins us now from her home in Arizona. Frances, welcome.
Great to be with you.
The film, as I said, talks about what caused this policy changes along the way, but I think it does something that other recent films haven't, and it shows the kind of intellectual infrastructure and architecture that was deliberately put in place that really fostered these policy changes. Tell us a little about those.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the operative word there is deliberative. You know, sometimes I think people believe that the recession that we're in, the Great Recession, you know, some believe depression, is a result of kind of just the natural business cycle, or this is just how things are. And we found something quite different in our research. I mean, it was a deliberate plan in the sense that in 1971, a future Supreme Court Justice, Lewis Powell, asked the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to write, or the U.S. Chamber asked him to write, kind of a memo, if you will, and it was entitled "Attack on American Free Enterprise," and of course this was just the inspiration for a plan that began to be implemented after that. Powell felt that if you look at 1971, you've got the civil rights movement, you've got the feminist movement. He really felt like corporate America was losing the battle, that profits were down. And so this kind of touched off a chain reaction of events by a very small but powerful, wealthy group of people to kind of enact deregulation at all levels of business, a corporate makeover of government. And it led to the creation of policy think tanks like Heritage and Cato. And what these think tanks did, they're ideological marketing organizations. Cato, not so much, but Heritage, Competitive Enterprise Institute, American Enterprise Institute. These guys handed over policy to Reagan. By the time Reagan comes in office, Democrats and Republicans are really aligned as far as big business goes and the purity, if you will, of the free market. And so the headlines you see today, we really want people to look at it in terms of this deliberate kind of movement. And we actually call it a kind of a political coup in the film. Both parties got swept up, the money, the lobbying, all of that. And in the end, death by a thousand cuts to the American middle class.
Yeah, and it really is a conjunction of these two forces, this intellectual architecture, think tanks that are providing a kind of underpinning that can be used then at the popular level. And then you have a populist, a charismatic leader like Ronald Reagan, who sells it to the American public. Let's listen.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
There's that infamous quote that turned things around. Government is our problem. We've got to get rid of it. And you emphasize what happened in the Reagan administration. Tell us about those years.
Well, Reagan comes in right away and on the heels of Jimmy Carter deregulating, the airline, the trucking industries. And they've really also decimated or beginning to decimate organized labor, which I really went to school on labor unions. I didn't know that much about them, but labor unions really educate their membership. They keep people engaged in the legislative process. And I think that was one of the reasons corporate America kind of went after, not to mention wages and benefits, but went after labor unions, and because they really educate people about the issues. And it's a really one of the cornerstones of democracy. But so Reagan, you know, first thing he comes in and fires all the air traffic controllers. And there's just little doubt, as Jeff Foh says in the film, there's little doubt that you know, he went after them. And then, of course, he went after taxes. And David K. Johnston is wonderful in the film talking about taxes. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times reporter. He did the tax beat for the Times. And so what people don't understand is that Reagan raised taxes on the middle class, lowered them on the super wealthy, and set and what Bush did, you know, second Bush did with his tax cut, just really amped that up even more. And as we say in the film, you know, this is a truly bipartisan effort. I mean, you've got the Democrats in many ways, you know, taking a cue from Powell, and in many ways economically not looking a whole lot different from Republicans.
Well, no, you point out that deregulation began in the Carter administration, and certainly Bill Clinton had an awful lot to do with it, not only in actively deregulating, but ignoring warnings in his own cabinet about what would happen if he kept his blind eye, untrained on these unregulated markets.
Right, and we of course see what happened with the Commodities Futures Modernization Act that he signed, which, you know, opened up the door to these credit default swaps, and you know, even some of the people that Phil Graham being an exception, you know, are calling now for, you know, Glass-Steagall to be reinstituted, but of course there's zero political will to do that because we're in this orgy of money. I mean, it's just phenomenal, the amounts of money spent on the presidential election. So these guys are all beholden. These Congress people are all lawmakers, all beholden to the money. And this is this. Our story tells the TikTok, if you will, of how the political economic decision making came about and its impact. On working people.
Well, part of that, too, I think, is reflected in one of the people you talked to, Leo Girard, who is the head of the Steelworkers Union. Let's listen to him.
What they've done for the last 20 years is destroy the ability of people who worked hard and played by the rules to have decent retirements.
I mean, this, again, talks more about the shift in wealth. It's not just that that there have been, you know, there was a crash because nobody was paying attention. In the process, wealth was siphoned from the poor and middle class, working class, to those wealthy, that 1%.
Right. For instance, like defined pensions versus 401ks, right? Mm-hmm. So the 401ks really save most companies about 50% on their employees' retirement. So that's just one way. We didn't even, you know, we really didn't get into health care and all the other ways that workers are paying more out of pocket for everything. And so what you're starting to see is an economy that has been reorganized in a fundamental way that as the former guy that founded Reaganomics, Paul Craig Roberts, former Reagan official, says, you know, we've created an economy that's impoverishing its workers. And, of course, we go into free trade and our trade agreements and NAFTA.
Well, I was going to say that it's the we've created part that we should emphasize on. It's not an accident. And I think it points to the big lie of free enterprise that, you know, we have these think tanks that have been promoting for a long time, get government out of business and things will go well. And yet there's no such thing. There's no such thing as an unregulated market or would collapse.
Exactly. I mean, government, the free market really is created by laws. And it's a question of who those laws benefit. And I think it's quite remarkable that it's been able to go on for this long. But we also go into media, the corporate consolidation ownership of media, and media becoming infotainment, no firewall between, you know, the business side of journalism and the, you know, the public interest part. And so nobody's really listening. There's no one representing. I mean, the media used to, the journalists used to, and with exceptions, present company included.
Appreciate that.
With long form, it's a much better format.
We're still owned by the people at the moment, and we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah.
And yet you point out that very few other owners in terms of commercial media, there are very few owners.
Yeah, I mean, there's six, actually.
Yeah. Worldwide.
And Bill Clinton. I mean, Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996
right.
that deregulated media ownership. And then, of course, Reagan started doing away with the Fairness Doctrine. He didn't write it off the books. Obama actually wrote the Fairness Doctrine off the books, which said you kind of had to have opposing views. So what you have is 90% of talk radio is very conservative, ideologically driven, supportive of deregulation. So at every
right.
level, people are being
right.
pounded with this notion of the perfection of the free market.
Who says polarization is the problem in Washington? It's the consensus that's killing us. Frances,
thank you
so much. And I'm going to look forward to your film tonight at Saxapaw. Thanks for talking with
us. Thanks for having me on.
Frances Causey's film, Heist, Who Stole the American Dream? It screens tonight at the Haw River Ballroom, Saxapaw, 7:30. Frances is going to join a Q&A session by Skype after the movie. For more information about tickets, go to hawriverballroom.com. Just ahead, a UNC Law School professor presents a photographic portrait of Japanese internment camps. Eric Muller joins us after a short break on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.